The Passover in Judaism is one of the high festivals that all Jewish people were expected at Jesus' time not only to celebrate in their homes, but if they were within proximity of Jerusalem, that they would walk to Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover. One interesting statistic, they know that Jerusalem went from 30,000 people during the non-festival time to 250,000, a quarter of a million in the festival times, because the accountants, and we have the records, kept track of how many sheep were sacrificed during the Passover. And so they figured one sheep for four people, and they had a number, they knew the number of sheep sacrificed. We have close to, if not exceeding, a quarter of a million people. Passover was considered a high point in the Jewish year. We know that Passover, and you will know it, if I asked you to tell me what Passover was, you could easily, many of you could easily tell me that this was the time when Israel was rescued from the Egyptians and they were being set free from oppression and slavery and loss. That would be the story of Passover. They would gather around the table in a prescribed Seder meal and had a liturgy, and some of you will have celebrated that Passover meal, and we over the years have done it here at Cross of Christ, and gone through the liturgical steps. And the most important part of it is when the child looks at the father or the grandfather and says, "Why do we do this thing?" And then they tell the story of being set free from bondage. This was the way the children would understand what happened at the Passover, that blood was put on the doorposts of the homes for those who believed, and the angel of death would go past those houses, would pass over those houses and not bring death to that home. This was the night of freedom and life. In one way, the Passover was a night and is a night of celebration. Freedom never comes easily. Y'all hear that? Freedom never comes easily. In fact, I would even suggest sustaining freedom never comes easily. And now here in this night, God steps forward in this evening. He steps forward with sound authority, godly sovereign authority, and he sets Israel free. I'm so struck by the events that happened in that night. Exodus 11 verse 4 says it this way. Moses says to Israel, "About midnight, I will go throughout Egypt." About midnight, I will go out throughout Egypt. Oh my goodness. The story of the night. For Egypt, it becomes the night of fear. Isn't it so interesting? For Israel, it becomes the night of freedom. And it all happens in the darkness. It all happens in darkness. We understand that the dark is seen as the place of danger. In the darkness, evil can reign. Bad things can happen in the dark. We can trip on furniture in the dark. I've done that. Our bed in our bedroom is evil. I've gotten huge bruises on my leg. And a few years ago, someone robbed our shed in the dark. I didn't know about it initially. And then I think, Gail, I think you said to me, "Why is our gas can in the backyard? It's usually stored in the shed, and it was just laying in the backyard." And I went to look, and we were robbed. Happened in the dark. That particular criminal went down the street robbing everyone. He had so much stuff, he stole a truck to carry it. Not funny, but funny. Because, first of all, why was a guy's car's, his keys in the truck? Of course, why wasn't my shed locked? Evil is seen as darkness, and evil creates fear for any of us. It does. Legitimate fear. We have the darkness of fear around us, but that's that part. But then there's also the darkness that's in our own hearts. Maybe I would call that the darkness of the soul, or as I've thought about it, the night of secrets. That's what this is, the night of secrets. And each of us here has that secret of the soul, that part of us that we really don't want people to know about, that maybe we could call it the ugly part or the shame part or the guilt part. Each of us has that kind of darkness of the soul, and it's those things, those behaviors that we hide from those around us. That's the secret. That's the darkness. We want them buried really deep within us and not let anyone penetrate into those fears. We don't want anybody to poke at them. And I get it. I understand. Why should everyone know everyone's business, right? And yet those very things that we hide and we bury, those very things that we put deep inside of us, those voices of guilt and those voices of shame, they hide. And they can get in the way of us feeling the freedom of that angel passing over the homes by the blood on the doorposts. We can actually prohibit that experience by hanging on to those fears and shames of the darkness of the night. We might call it the long dark night. Because if we don't shed ourselves of those things, if we don't shed ourselves of those things, they hang on. And then they get in the way of knowing freedom, and they actually become oppressive. And I don't blame any of us for keeping those deep in our soul and let them be. Years can go by and we can bury those things so they never come out again. I get it. I really do get it. We want to bury them and just hide them. And yet they're there. And every once in a while they come popping out. They just pop out. Oftentimes in unexpected ways, something happens. It could be an association of something, sometimes a smell, sometimes a behavior. And all of a sudden, that thing that you've buried inside of yourself comes oozing back out, and oozing is the right word. It's a pussy blister. Kind of ugly, kind of disgusting. And you think to yourself, why did I react that way? Been there, done that. I don't want Gail to tell you stories. We can wish, frankly, we can wish for our own personal Passover. We can wish for our own redemption from oppression and our own redemption from enslavement. Can we be enslaved today? Yes, we can. Those dark things of the soul, that stuff deep inside of us, they become our oppression and they can become our enslavement. It's striking that Scripture is filled with verses of darkness versus light. Listen to some of them. Isaiah 42, verse 26 says this, I will lead the blind by a way they do not know. I will make darkness into light before them. The blind person. We can have physical blindness, but can we have spiritual blindness? We certainly can. Psalm 107, verse 10. There were those who dwelt in darkness and in the shadow of death, prisoners in misery and chains, because they're living in darkness. Colossians 1, verse 3. For he, Jesus, rescued us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son. But we live in the domain of darkness. Isn't that interesting? John 1, verse 5. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. The light shines in the darkness, but those living in the dark don't get it. And Colossians 1:18 says it this way, to those who do not know Jesus, the faith which we walk is nothing but foolishness. My paraphrase. Nothing but foolishness. Because they're living in darkness. So the assumption is this, the world is oppressive, and there has to be a way out of it for all of us, or what happens, then we live in desperation. We will. If there is no way out, we can live in a horrible desperation. Our reading that Jonathan did a minute ago was from the Gospel of Mark, and it's the preparation for the Passover meal. Jesus, I find this so striking. We don't have any indication in Scripture when Jesus made these plans, but Jesus made plans for the Passover meal. And I find it so interesting. Like we heard about the guy carrying water on his head, which was really the task of a woman. And so you'll know, because it's a secret, because Jesus' life was at risk. So this guy who was a follower of Jesus, just imagine that, an unknown guy who was a follower of Jesus. Sound familiar? Unknown people who follow Jesus turn the world upside down. He carries some water in his head, kind of socially scandalous, so that they would know where to find the guy, and he would take them to the upper room. Jesus had pre-planned all this. It wasn't some divine moment, man with water on head. He pre-planned it. We know disciples were assigned the various tasks to prepare the Passover meal. There were things that you had to do in preparation. Mark 14, verse 16 says it this way. The disciples left, went into the city, that would be into the city of Jerusalem, and found things just as Jesus had told them. So they prepared for the Passover. They did what they had done since childhood. Isn't that interesting? When he said to them, go and do the Passover meal, they pulled out the Passover meal file. It's kind of like our Christmas file. This is what we do for Christmas. And this is the food we eat. Easter's coming. This is the food for Easter. Ham, 89 cents a pound, Meyer. You pull that one out right off the bat. Bought it yesterday. Isn't that what we do? They did that too. See, they didn't realize this Passover was going to be so different. They just assumed it was another Passover meal that they had celebrated their whole lives, year after year after year, and they had celebrated it for the last couple of years with Jesus. So they went and did their preparation that they have done and been part of since they were children. We all have plans for our festival moments, don't we? How we celebrate. And everything was in place for them together in that evening of that final meal. What they didn't realize is they were entering into a long, dark night. We know that Jesus washed feet, and we know there was a reflective dinner and conversation. John, the gospel writer, tells us that. He gives us very specifics of the conversations that the other three gospels don't share. We know that Judas left the meal to do his betrayal before the consecration of the Lord's Supper. Remember, communion's always done in a body when you're in oneness of faith. He was not in oneness, and he was gone. So we know Judas left. And we know that Jesus, in the midst of the old covenant of Passover, notice the old covenant, and talking about freedom from oppression, gave a new gift. We call it the Lord's Supper. We know that he broke with the historic liturgy and did something new, which had to be astonishing to his disciples. He lifted the bread and he lifted the cup, and the disciples would have been so struck by this new thing, never before done. And now Jesus lifts the bread, then later in the meal lifts the cup. They would not have quite understood what all of this meant until after it was all over. And when they ended their evening, they did so with a song from the Psalms, and they walked through the dark to pray, as was custom at the Garden of Gethsemane. Nothing different, all the same. And then it wasn't. In the night of secrets, Jesus prays, and literally, all hell breaks loose. Jesus is kissed by a betrayer. Peter lifts a sword and cuts a guy's ear off. Not one of his brighter moments. The disciples flee into the olive orchard away from Jesus. They flee into the dark. They go, those disciples, they go into their own night of secrets. And Peter denies Jesus three times. What started as the voice of freedom with the Passover becomes something horrific and beyond belief. Evil is winning. Darkness is winning. The night of secrets is triumphant.